Yeah. Look, I'm going to come back to gratitude again. Even if you don't feel it right now in this moment, that there's something to be grateful for or something to look forward to. I like to say to people in a moment, if they're feeling overwhelmed and they're struggling, is just to stop for a moment. You know, stop and be grateful for who you are and what you have and where you are. Get excited that there are good things ahead. And just know that if in any situation, if it's an obstacle or an opportunity, it's completely a choice. And right now, I think with so much uncertainty in the world, I think that to know that when nothing is certain, that anything is possible.
Do you need encouragement to turn tragedies into your own triumphant life story? If so, this podcast is for you. Listen to powerful guests who have persevered through challenges so you can gain strength to build your championship life. The host of Professor of Perseverance Podcast, Dr. James Perdue.
Thank you for coming in today and on the podcast, Professor of Perseverance Podcast. And should I dare to say, I am the Professor of Perseverance himself, Dr. James Perdue. And thank you all of you for coming in and listening. And I mean, it's because of you is why I'm able to do this or not do this, right? All right. Hey, even if you're not getting anything out of it, I get tons of stuff from these guests that come in and tell their stories, how they were able to triumph, kick challenges in the teeth, and strive in life. All right. Today, our guest is a actress, model. She is the author of How to Be Resilient, and we'll talk about how to get your own digital copy here in a few minutes. And on our show today, welcome Stacy.
Oh, good morning from Sydney. Great to be here with you today, James.
And the last name is Copas?
Copas.
Ah, wasn't too bad off from it.
So you did well.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you for... I know you're early in the morning in Sydney, and so glad that you were able to get up and come on. And I know you had a little issues, but us quads have issues sometimes.
Yeah, we have those days where our bodies don't cooperate with what we want them to do, and this morning was certainly one of those days, and it's great that you understand what it's like.
And, sometimes it seems like our body has a mind of its own. We're trying to get it to go one way, and it wants to go definitely to its other way. And thank you for coming in, Prospecting with Disability. Talked to him as we were waiting to get started. Has some MS, progressive MS going on. And also a newcomer here. Oh, there's Cam Patella. Hey, thank you, buddy, for coming in. Thank you for coming. We're just getting started, Cam. Thank you. All right. Stacy? Just don't hold anybody off any longer. I was telling you before we got started, I didn't even go read your blog and stuff, and I didn't snoop around to find out what happened to you. I do know that you're a quadriplegic, and so that's why I reached out to you, but I don't know your story. So let's go ahead and get started on Stacy and how life has come to be where it's at.
So life certainly has thrown us some interesting curveballs, but I think if we're looking at the quadriplegia aspect of my story, it was the 2nd of December 1990, and I was cooling off in a relative's backyard swimming pool with my younger brother, who was 10, and a couple other boys around the same age. And it was a pool I was very familiar with, and I did what I did every time I used to go and visit this place, is I used to like just to climb up on the edge of the pool and dive in. This was like just an above-ground pool, so it wasn't a deep pool, and, it certainly wasn't built for diving, but that was what I liked to do, and it didn't go unnoticed. I was getting yelled at to stop, but I think we all remember what it was like to be 12 and bulletproof and invincible. And so I just ignored those requests to stop. And one particular time I was just standing on the edge and I thought that I was splashing too much as I was diving in. So I stood there for a moment and I thought, what could I do to make, a really nice clean entry into the water without splashing? And so I thought that perhaps if I was to, hold my feet together and keep my legs straight, I thought in theory that would make a nice clean entry into the water. So I took a deep breath and I did exactly that. And it felt like any other dive that I'd done before until I went to try and swim up to the surface and I realized I couldn't move. So I didn't feel any pain. I didn't feel like anything had gone wrong, but I was completely conscious, holding my breath. Panic set in very, very quickly, but I was, you know, desperately thinking, how can I get my brother's attention to help me, which I couldn't do. So I held my breath for as long as I could, but when I couldn't hold it any longer, I had to give in. And as you know, my lungs filled with water, I blacked out. And eventually, my brother realized that there was something seriously wrong, and you know, they raised the alarm for help. So I ended up getting taken to a local hospital, then helicoptered to a second hospital, and then taken to a third hospital. And it was there in intensive care, you know, later that night that I had, I was told that I'd actually broken my neck and drowned, and that I'd never walk again. So, you know, I literally, you know, felt like a death sentence for me at that point in my life. I was a pretty talented athlete before that. I was a pitcher in the softball team in summer. I was one of the first girls to ever play soccer for my school. That was 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago. I was a representative runner every distance from the 100 metres through to the cross country. And, academically I was doing incredibly well. All I wanted to do with my life was be a vet. And I'd just gotten into a, you know, selective secondary agricultural college. I had a pretty normal family and really good, you know, friends and things like that. So, you know, I went from being, you know, well and truly on track and, you know, confident and happy with where my life was going to, you know, having all of that sort of gone in a second. So, it certainly was a huge life change for me at that point in time.
Yeah, it sure didn't take long when a true spinal cord injury, because we know some people, they get a spinal cord injury and they're blessed. They have very minimum, some of them. But the majority, I mean, we lose everything at the snap of the bone. Okay, just say it's like instead of a snap of a finger, you know, when that column, the bone breaks around, then it damages that cord. Yeah, it's gone instantly. So,
yeah, like I'm pretty fortunate in the fact that I've ended up with an incomplete injury. So, even though it's like a, you know, it's still a, you know, it's a still quadriplegia, but you know, I'm fortunate to have, you know, spent over 30 years in a manual wheelchair, and I've worked really hard to maintain as much independence as I can. So, 30 years later, those sort of things start to catch up, and the joints and all those sort of things are starting to protest a little bit.
That's right. Protest more than normal for us. Our new normal, you know, is when we get paralyzed. And then again, like you said, the body this morning, like you said, wasn't following your directions and had, like I said, a mind of its own. And as you get older, it seems like its mind grows more than what we care to have.
Yeah, it becomes a little bit more defiant, doesn't it?
Now, has anyone, I've had this, people ask me this before, and I'm going to ask you, I'm sure they have, but I'm just going to put it out there for the other listeners. Has anybody said to you, if there was an experimental drug surgery, would you go do that to walk again? Now, yeah. I'm asking this question in two stages.
Okay.
Today and in the first 5 years of your injury.
Oh, yeah, that's a big difference, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And yes, and yes. People may be surprised to hear the answer.
Yeah, definitely in those first 5 years, I would have given anything to have had a chance to have regained what I'd lost. I think there's a lot of, there's so much grief in those first 5 years and, you know, so many regrets about, you know, what you'd done and where life is. And, I know at those first 5 years, I would have given anything to, you know, I've turned back the clock and either not taken the dive or, you know, really just to not be alive at all. It was, you know, it's a very dark place those first 5 years. But, you know, now in, like I said, I'm 30 years on now. I wouldn't. Walking is so low down my list of priorities. And I think it surprises a lot of people. But, you know, really as long as I can be as independent as possible and I'm healthy and those sort of things. And that's really where my priorities lie. I throw the line out, walking's overrated quite a lot. But yeah, like I wouldn't want to mess with what I've got. And really, the injury, once I started to reframe the way I looked at it, has opened up so many opportunities. I can say with absolute certainty I've done things and had experiences I never would have had. And now it's given me a platform to be able to be an international speaker on resilience and be able to work with people and organizations to shift the way that they sort of perceive and respond to uncertainty and adversity and change. So it's a great thing and I wouldn't change it now.
And you mentioned resiliency. You got a book on how to be resilient. And again, mm-hmm. towards the end of the program, we tell you how to get your own personal e-copy, digital copy of that as we get towards the end of the program. All right. Now, here's the other part of the other question. All right. Because I've had that happen. You were 12 when you had your injury. I was 19 2 weeks into college as an athlete as well. I got my neck broke playing football. All right. Yeah. So same thing for me. First 5 years, I would have done anything. I actually went to 18 different rehabs in 5 years trying to find that cure. All right. After the last one, I lied to the family, lied to myself. I didn't lie at that time, but it turned out being a lie because I sit there and said, not that I'm quitting trying to walk again, but we need to put it on the back burner. If I'm going to have any type of life, I need to go to college, get my degree, and, learn to live the best I can now. All right. Again, wasn't a lie then, but it turned out to be a lie because that day when I said that and went back to college, I'd never been to one rehab trying to walk. Now, I've been to rehab for other things, but not to try to walk. And so it turned out to be a lie. But again, it's turned out to be the best thing I did when I finally accepted everything.
Yeah.
All right. The other part you said 30 years later, I'm in my 38th year. Yep. Walking is the lowest thing. I mean, because if I can roll around in my wheelchair faster than I can walk with crutches or a walker, or even if I'm walking without anything, if I don't have the same get up and go as normal, then you're slowing me down.
Yeah,
getting things done.
That's exactly how I felt about it too.
Now, I would today, 10 years from now, would definitely sign up for an experimental for me to go to the bathroom without all the devices and chemicals and everything and get without UTIs and have good bowel program. I mean, healthy, go ahead and say it, dump. And I mean, I would definitely sign up for that to get those as normal as possible.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that there's those little things. And I think a lot of people sort of see, particularly someone with a spinal cord injury, and there's just an assumption that you just can't walk. But it is all of those other things that causes us so much extra, stress and you said with the UTIs and stuff like that, like something I have, I've had chronic UTIs for pretty much my entire, spinal cord journey and, needing to be on prophylactic antibiotics all the time and having to do all those sort of things. And, for me, I think as a woman, it's a bit harder. It's like every time I need to go, it's like I'm in the bathroom for 20 minutes to 30 minutes. There's those type of things. But again, I just sort of look at it and I'm like, look, this is just part of my journey. I think now that I'm a bit older, it's like, oh, look, I'd like to be able to transfer a little bit easier. But a lot of that has been me neglecting some of my, stretching and stuff like that over the years and, ending up with, really tight legs and stuff like that. And then that aggravates. So a lot of the things, like had I have been a little bit more disciplined with things like that through the time, then I probably would be in a bit better shape now as well.
I definitely understand that one. Yes. So definitely not in my athletic peak as before. Definitely not. All right. Now, again, I was 19, you were 12. Quite a bit of difference in being a child and an adult getting injured. So as a child, did some of all of your childhood friends stay, support you, or did they, I'm sure they, as they got older, they went their own way, still find their own way of life. I understand that. But and then, of course, you may have gained new friends.
Yeah.
Did you find some new bullies, people making fun of you? You know how children are. They're point blank honest on what they say sometimes, but then sometimes they're just mean about it.
Yeah, look, for the most part, I think because I had my injury right at the end of, like, it was literally at the end of my primary schooling. So we were going to, you know, most of my friends and stuff, we're all going to different high schools anyway. So there was going to be a little bit of that drift. But, you know, I end up spending 7 months in hospital because I said I was too young to go to a rehab center. So, you know, and it was that was the sort of first half of high school and, you know, over the Christmas holidays here in Australia. So I had, you know, my closest friends were coming and visiting me in the hospital and doing all that sort of stuff. And I think once I had to go to a different, I couldn't go to the school I was meant to go to and, you know, it wasn't accessible and we certainly weren't in any emotional state to be able to fight that at the time. So I ended up, you know, having to start high school in the middle of the year at a school far from home where I didn't know a single soul, and that was hellish. That was really challenging. But, you know, I ended up making new friends. I don't remember. I think there was only really a couple of instances, sort of mid high school, where I had a couple of little niggly incidents where, little sort of bullying, name calling, that type of thing that I dealt with. But for the most part, I pretty much, I think I insulated myself from a lot of that sort of stuff and just really focused on just trying to get on with it, but not really letting people know that I really was struggling with it. But I think just sort of keeping my head down and, yeah, staying out of any trouble was helpful. But, yeah, look, it's, you make different friends along the way and then as you get into adulthood, then, you know, when you go to work and you do all those sort of things and, you know, there's different people in your life for, you know, different seasons. You got some people that are around for decades and, sort of the childhood friends, I, you know, sort of keep in touch with a couple of them on Facebook, but that's about it now. And, yeah, it's, yeah, as you evolve through life, you get different people come and go.
And again, we're talking about mine being as an adult with yours as a child. What was yours? I mean, of course, again, some of the name calling, some of the stuff, and we learned to put a face on to hide, to let people not know how bad we're really feeling. One, we don't want to feel sorry for us. One, we don't want mom and dad worrying about us. And so we learned to put it on a pretty good face. They figure it out though, but we think we're doing pretty good. All right. So now with these, some of the childhood, how are you able to maintain being positive, able to try to do your best? I mean, you had to ignore them, think they're just ignorant, don't understand. I mean, so how are you able to maintain a positive attitude to be the best that you could be at that time while you're still learning your body and what's going to happen and not happen?
Yeah, look, it was only just a couple of people in one of my classes. So I just kept going. I didn't engage with them or anything like that. I just, you know, pretty much just ignored it and kept moving. And that was the best way that I felt to do it. So yeah, as I said, it was only just a very short period of time and it wasn't a huge thing. It was just a little bit of name calling type of thing. But yeah, for the most part, I just, just got on with it, spent time with people that, you know, that were, you know, friendly and I felt comfortable with. So that was pretty much it. As far as keeping positive, I had some pretty destructive habits through my teens and I spent a lot of my high school years drunk and stoned, and that was my outlet.
Uh-huh.
I look at it in hindsight and I was like, it was almost like trying to create moments of artificial happiness in those moments. And it was just that escape. And I said, not particularly unusual for teenagers to do that at the best of times. But I think, yeah, just the combination of adjusting to, you know, a new life with spinal cord injury and just, you know, identity is such a huge part of being a teen and trying to figure out who you are and where you fit in and that type of stuff. So it was just sort of compounded with that.
Yeah, but I can understand the, again, finding a way out, even though it's temporarily. to get your mind away from everything. I can understand that. And so, you're exactly right. You know, especially at that age, you're trying to figure out who you are, who you want to be, who you want to become later on in life, and try to figure out who's accepting of you, who to stay away from. Yeah, a lot of things are still going on because you're in school. A lot of peer pressure that goes on there. Now, mom and dad, when they first found out about this, I understand how mom and dad, especially mom, react to what happened to you and everything. So explain to us how they were able to maybe support you and to keep you going, give you the big positive outlooks and help you persevere.
Yeah, look, mum and dad were interesting. Like, I ended up in a hospital that was nowhere near where I lived. So, but for the most of the time, you know, I had mum or dad there. Most of the time, mum, you know, came over to the hospital and spent time with me there. It's funny though, it could have come from a family where no one really talks about anything deep. So it was more of a, you know, just physically moving on with things, but no one really talked much about how each other felt about things or stuff like that. And I look at it now, it's like I'm incredibly grateful for the fact that they didn't put me in cotton wool. They just encouraged me to go off and do what I would have done as a teenager anyway. So there wasn't any, you know, not letting me go and do things. They encouraged me to, you know, to go to parties with friends and to go to social things. And, you know, live music was my favorite thing through that period of time. So I got involved in a youth group for kids with disabilities. I had some friends there. We used to, you know, pretty much, you know, organize what gigs we wanted to go to. There was a particular, you know, respite house that was for, you know, for teenagers with disability. And we used to sort of plan, you know, however many school holidays ahead so that we could book the whole place out with just our sort of social group and things like that. So, you know, that was pretty helpful. But even now, like, my family have still never really talked about what happened. I was actually living with my parents when I had the 30th anniversary of my injury, and they didn't even acknowledge it. I didn't even bring it up. It was almost like it was just pretend it didn't exist. Even though I had shared some stuff on social media, I'd sort of gone to my mum the day before saying, oh, look, I'm looking for some photos. You know, I'm writing up these blogs and stuff around my 30-year journey. And she's like, oh, yeah. Like, because I said, oh, you know, tomorrow's the anniversary. She goes, yeah, I know, kind of thing. And then nothing was ever said about it. So it's been quite strange too. And a lot of people sort of go, well, how did I end up sort of with the, you know, resilience and the perseverance and all that sort of stuff when there really wasn't a lot of, I guess, nurturing around it. But I think that I probably had to be in order to get through. That's kind of how I sort of see how it all evolved.
I remember I used to be a school teacher, and then students every now and again, they would ask, Coach, when's your birthday? When's your birthday, Coach? And then I would go, I have four birthdays. And they go, what? Four? I said, yeah, I go June 4th, June 12th, July 7th, September 11th. And then I would tell them that June 4th was when I got saved. All right, recreation. June 12th is when Mama actually squeezed and pushed me on out. Then I tell them July 7th was baptism. And then September 11th, the day that my life ended the way I knew it, died and was born to be paralyzed in a wheelchair and where I'm at today. And so, yeah, I would tell them that I have four birthdays. So, so when you say you were celebrating your 30th, you know, so for me, it's my 38th birthday, you know, after being paralyzed.
Yeah, I've heard people call it their rebirth day. I look at it as, I look at it as an anniversary, but to me, because mine's the 2nd of December, and I look at it, that's my new year. So, you know, I look at, you know, my year essentially goes from the 2nd of December to the 2nd of December rather than, you know, the 1st of January type of thing. So, yeah, but it took me a long time to get to the point where I actually did acknowledge and celebrate the day. I sort of went back through my social media. It's probably only been about the last 5 years that I've commented publicly on it. And now it's, it is a real celebration. And then like last year, I wanted to do something really big. I wanted to do an event. But unfortunately, with all the COVID lockdown restrictions and things like that, it wasn't possible to sort of do that. So I ended up starting a series of blogs, and I did the hashtag 30 years rolling. And, I'm still to complete it, but I've done 20 or 21 posts about different stories of that 30-year journey, and that's the way that I've decided to celebrate and acknowledge that journey.
Then take that and make your book.
That's what I'm working on at the moment. On the second book, yeah.
And make it a physical book for people to buy. Don't just give it away. They can read it off your blog, but get the book and get it out there to them. All right, so you got through school, relatively best you could, unharmed, positive, you knew how to party, but a lot of us knew back then what to do. Yeah. And that's before even being paralyzed. All right. So now then, let's get into the bigger part of your life here. I don't know if it's a bigger part, but let's get into an area that I haven't stepped into. So I'm not a singer. Even I don't like to hear myself sing in the shower. So you said you like singing, music. Also, how did you get into your modeling and some acting career? So how did all that come across?
Yeah, well, the singing is a very new thing. I've always been incredibly passionate about music, and it's only been in the last couple of years that I've really recognized, acknowledged, and celebrated the role that music has played in my journey. And I look at it now and I'm thinking at the lowest points that I had in my teens that music kept me alive. And I was pretty fortunate to be at the lowest point in my life at the height of grunge in the 90s. And, that angsty, angry kind of music was a perfect soundtrack for, where I was at in my life and how I was feeling about things. So music was great. But I only started taking singing lessons late last year. And it was via my boyfriend at the time, my boyfriend now. He's a musician, and we just started singing together, and he was like, you've got a really good voice, you should do something with this. And I was like, oh, you're just saying that because you're my boyfriend. I started taking lessons and really immersing in it, and that's been amazing. And I think also when I'm having times where I'm feeling pretty flat and pretty low, just to either embrace music as a, just to listen and move with it, or to, I'm finding singing, just the vibration and the energy it creates in the body just is very uplifting. So I've been doing that. The modelling, I got asked to do a couple of fashion parades and stuff like that. I just do the odd little thing here and there. And I think from a, a diversity perspective, you don't see people in wheelchairs that, in films and in media and doing all that. So I think the main reason I said yes to that is I thought, it's an opportunity to create a little bit of visibility.
And movie people, wake up. Quit getting people that are able-bodied playing somebody in a wheelchair. There's millions of people in wheelchairs. You can find somebody that can act. That's what it's called, acting. Don't get these people out there. Don't get me wrong, it's not me. I'm not for that. I'm not going to be the actor. But I'm telling you what, I would represent a wheelchair person before getting someone that's normal. There's plenty of people out there. Get them out there, movie people.
Yeah, I've heard it referred to as cripping up, isn't it, where they get the able-bodied actors to act the disability parts. But, then I did have an opportunity to do a film, and I was very fortunate that this particular film that I did, because I had zero acting experience. I'd never wanted to do anything like that. But there was a particular film. It was like an indie film here in Sydney. And the lead role was for, a woman who uses a wheelchair. And they were very, very committed to casting authentically. So they went through, they struggled to find somebody. And then I ended up getting a message on LinkedIn And from the director saying, oh, look, you know, and it wasn't someone I was connected with. She said, oh, look, I'm casting for, you know, a low budget indie feature film being shot in Sydney, and we're looking for a lead actress who uses a wheelchair. Would this be something that might be up your alley? And I was like, oh my goodness, like what a crazy thing. First of all, I had to just, I did a bit of research to make sure it wasn't dodgy. And, but, you know, then I had a conversation with them and I was like, well, you know, and but she said that the lengths they went to, and it ended up being that she started searching on LinkedIn for, you know, women in Sydney who used a wheelchair, and then came across my YouTube channel where I had some videos from, you know, speaking on stage and things like that. And so they were like, you know, and when they talked about the character for the film, it was actually a romantic comedy. And they talked about the character, and I'm like, oh wow, this character sounds, you know, not incredibly dissimilar to who I am. So, and then I said yes, even though I was terrified. And I just got coached through the whole film. And, you know, 9 months later, I was in a cinema and watched myself on the big screen. And it was, you know, a really interesting process. It was hard work, a lot more harder work than I thought it would be. But I just, for me, it was to challenge myself, but it was also just to create that visibility. And to the best of my knowledge, like, I know definitely in Australia, I'm not quite sure if it's worldwide, but as far as I know, that I'm as the first wheelchair user to have a lead role in a feature film. So I've done a couple little dabbles since then, but and I've been asked to audition for a few things. But you know, for me, working on resilience and being a speaker and a coach is something that I'm sort of more committed to. If there's little projects that come up, I'll look at them. But for the most part, my priority is speaking. But it's nice to have been able to sort of be a little bit of a pioneer. I think that's the thing is, you know, people can't be what they can't see. And that's what I thought that I really needed to do, is just to be an example to show that it is possible.
Now go Google, when we get done here, Jesse Will With Me Strawham. I guess if you do Jesse Will With Me, it'll come up with the rest of it. And she lives over in where I live in Tennessee, next state over, and I think it's North Carolina, and she's got into a little bit of acting. And so I don't think it's a lead role like you're talking, but I interviewed her last year. And so she's trying to get out there to show people that they can. All right, now let's go back. I got two things I want to bring up here. One, you mentioned early on, I should have got it then. You're talking about in the pool, find out your spinal cord injury, quadriplegic, and what level of injury are you?
Yeah, C5-6 incomplete.
C5-6, I'm a C5-6 incomplete. And yep. So, yeah, all right, C5-6 incomplete. Now then, we don't have to go in deep about this, but you did bring it up, and so let's go ahead, because you know it's on people's mind. You have a boyfriend. You've had boyfriends.
I've been married, yeah.
So. Okay, you've been married. Sex is very important in relationships. Now, you're paralyzed from your neck down, except for you can move your arms. All right. Sex. Again, we don't have to get real deep into it, but
yeah.
But being a woman is paralyzed. You can still have sex.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so funny when people sort of ask those questions, isn't it? And it's funny when they indirectly ask it, because they go, oh, can you still have children? And I'm like, they just want to know if you can have sex.
There you go. That's when you introduce them to your children.
Yeah, and it's funny, although, you know, I have one of my mates, and then someone says, can you have sex? And they're like, oh, you know, if they're an attractive young person, you're like, oh, well, would you like to find out?
That's right.
But I'm fortunate because as far as my level of incompleteness is that I've got, you know, almost completely full sensation, and I'm very lucky that I can move and I've got movement and stuff. So, but yeah, it is, you know, an incredibly important part of a relationship, physical intimacy. And and I think the main thing is that it's always just about communication. and that's a biggie. So, I haven't had any major issues. I haven't had any complaints.
As long as you're not getting complaints, you're doing right. So
that's it.
There you go. Okay. So I'm like you. I'm an incomplete as well, and I have a lot of sensation, and I'm very blessed because I know that sensation, even though it may not be 100%, it has prevented me from getting pressure sores because I can feel when I need to move. And whenever I get something that's hurting so bad, I feel bad for the ones that can't feel because they have no idea what they're doing to get a sore until it's too late. And it's from
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Yeah, we're very fortunate.
Yes, we're very blessed in that area. And again, come sex, it's a little beneficial when you still have sensation. So
definitely.
All right, now then. I'm looking over your shoulder here because you did mention incomplete. You said some movement, something. It looks like what we call here in America, Canadian crutches. Is there forearm crutches? Is that what's behind you?
No, I think, you can probably see.
On your other shoulder, right there.
That side. Okay, so that's on my door handle. They're actually all of my medals because I actually ended up going back and competing in athletics in my 30s. And so you kind of the bottom half of that is there. They're all my medals from when I was doing competitive athletics for a few years.
All right, I just thought they were forearm crutches or Canadian crutches that you were able to stand up a little bit. That's what I thought they were. Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately not. And as I said, I'm not one for regrets, but I do regret that I didn't maintain my stretching as good as I could have because, I could have done some assisted standing, but unfortunately the hamstrings are too tight to do those things now.
A little tight. You can play the banjo with them.
So. Oh, yeah. So you know what it's like. To this stage post-injury, unless you've been very vigilant with these things. So I know it's something that I really need to do some work on.
All right. Now, if you were to give a couple of tips on how someone can overcome their adversity, their problem, their situation, what two or three advice or tips could you give to the listeners to help them, you get past what's going on?
Yeah, look, my first tip is going to be something that sounds a little bit counterintuitive, but it comes back to gratitude. And it's saying thank you for whatever's happening, even if it doesn't seem like something that you want to be grateful for, because you actually can't feel bad about something you're grateful for. So even if you don't physically feel it, emotionally feel it at the time, it's saying thank you. I use some mantras around gratitude now. I use it every day. So in any time where things feel overwhelming or challenging, the line I use is thank you for the opportunity to be who I am, where I am with what I have at this moment in time. And it creates an experience of gratitude, which creates an environment of abundance rather than focusing on what's wrong. So if we focus on what's good, we're alive, there's always opportunities. We can't change what's happened, but we can change the story we tell about what's happened. We can change how we feel about what's happened, and we can change what we do next. So that's the best advice I can give on that one.
Okay. All right. That's good. To be very grateful what you have and what you still can experience in life. All right. Now then, here's a question. I don't know. I just thought of it. I've never asked another spinal cord injury. I know what I would say in this one. If you had to go back all over again, I know you would prefer not doing it, diving, and have a normal life as possible. All right. I guess I am saying that. Would you change things and not do that? Or would you go, man, I've had a better life than I would expect. I would still do it. I would still dive. I would still and let it play out like it has. Or would you say, no, forget this. I'd rather just normal. What would you do? And there's no right or wrong answer.
No. I wouldn't change a thing. I look at who I am now and the experiences I've had, the the people that are in my life. And I know that if even any second of anything up until this time had been different, then my life would be different now. And I wouldn't change. Like, as I said, the only thing I would change is I would have kept stretching. That's the only thing.
There you go.
Because that's the only thing I would have done differently is, maintained my flexibility. That's probably the thing that hinders me the most at the moment. But no, I wouldn't have. Obviously you have times where you do the what ifs. But, you know, really I just sort of think I've got so much more purpose. I've got so much more impact. There's so many things I can do and people that I can be of service to now that I wouldn't have been able to if my life had followed the path that I'd planned it.
There's only one thing that I would change, even though it would not change. I know that. But if I could change it, it would be, I mean, I'm like you. I've had a remarkable life compared to what they said from the beginning. You know, said I would never walk again, maybe not move from her neck down. They even told me at the age of 19, putting me in a nursing home. I'd be too much of a problem to care for. I'd never get any better. Ha, 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 doctors. Thank you for that one. All right.
Yeah, so exactly.
The only one thing that I wish could happen, and again, I know it would never happen, but I regret that my family had to go through this with me. The pain, the sorrow, you know, the frustration, the agony, the depression, you know, they went through the roller coaster with me and the ride. And so I wished but again, it's a package deal. So they had to go with me. I'm guess they had to. They could have put me in a nursing home and forgot all about it, I guess. But that's the only thing that I wish they didn't have to go through everything. But they're going through everything that I'm exceeding what they told I would do.
Yeah. And they've got to be proud of that. That's something that I think I agree with you. I know it did put a lot of stress on my family, and it's also interesting because I think they've said that, you know, the stats are around, you know, when something like this happens to a child in a, you know, or, you know, a child gets cancer or something like that, that, you know, 80% of relationships actually break up. And, you know, my mum and dad are still together, you know, 40 years on, you know, 40 years into theirs. But, yeah, I think that's the thing is I think we'd all, you know, like to have spared the people around us some of the pain that they went through as well. I agree with you there.
All right, Stacey, appreciate you being on here. Boy, you've been incredible. A great guest for here. Very positive.
Thank you.
You're helping people. Now, they say, 100 years from now, this stuff is going to be all over the internet still. They say, once it's on, it's on. So 100 years from now, we're going to be helping somebody. Or I say, you're going to be helping somebody. I'm just sitting back and giving the platform. All right. But go ahead and tell us how people can get a hold of you if they want to talk with you, maybe book you for an event. Nowadays with COVID that happened, everything, get you a Zoom call going and make some money on there. So if someone can get a hold of you, get with you, tell us how we can get a hold of you and on your social media.
Yeah, look, Stacey Kopass on any of the social medias. Probably the quickest way to even to reach out to me is an email of helpmestacey@gmail.com is always a nice one to remember. But yeah, look, I manage all of my own social media. And so if anyone wants to reach out and connect with me on any of the platforms, I'm most active on Instagram and LinkedIn. I always welcome a connection. I'm an open book. And yeah, as you said, with COVID, I've got a good setup here now. I've recently moved into a new apartment. I've got my beautiful little office studio set up now, and I think that it's been amazing. The world has opened up in so many ways. I was actually in the US late 2019, sort of doing a bit of a scout to start doing some speaking tours over there. But I've actually ended up doing a lot more work internationally through being able to be in my office here in Sydney and be able to speak virtually. And, you know, whether it's an event or whether it's one-on-one coaching, then, you know, I'm here to be of service.
There we go. And, yep, way to get this stuff done now with this technology. Boy, I'm glad that my injury is now work I can experience with the new technology that's coming out the way it is. Not to say that 50 years ago, people, I'm sure they did the best they could with what they had.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want to be there. So I'm glad I'm at this age.
I'm grateful too.
That's right. So I go back to being gratitude. There you go. Grateful for this. So, all right. And thank you. Now, one last thing here. We know there's people struggling. We know people are hurting. If you can give a powerful message to help them get through today, that would be awesome, Stacey.
Yeah. I'm going to come back to gratitude again. Even if you don't feel it right now in this moment, that there's something to be grateful for or something to look forward to. I like to say to people in a moment, if they're feeling overwhelmed and they're struggling, is just to stop for a moment. You know, stop and be grateful for who you are and what you have and where you are. Get excited that there are good things ahead. And just know that if in any situation, if it's an obstacle or an opportunity, it's completely a choice. And right now, I think with so much uncertainty in the world, I think that to know that when nothing is certain, that anything is possible.
Anything is possible. Stay in there. The longer you stay in the game, the better chance the impossible is going to be possible. So, hey, I want to thank Cam for coming in and prospecting with disabilities. He's saying, or he or she, I don't know if it's he or she. I never asked that one yet, I don't think. That they are saying thanks for sharing. And you're quite welcome. And thank you all for coming in during this time. All right, tell you if there's anything I can do to help you. And I'll put your social media and stuff in the show notes so people make it easier for people to find you. And so, hey, everybody, thank you for coming in. And the people coming in on the replay, be sure to share this out to someone that's kind of hurting. Again, you don't have to be diving into a swimming pool and become a quadriplegic or got your neck broke playing football quadriplegic. The message is still the same, providing hope, energy, providing a message to overcome adversity. Everybody else, hey, if I can help you, go to my website, professorofperseverance.com, and you'll see down at the bottom, you'll scroll down and you'll see a free mini course with a free book on it. And speaking of book, we'll get yours. And so sign up for that, and the mini course and the book are both titled Your Past Doesn't Have a Future, But You Do. Create Your Future Today. Before we get out of here, good gracious, Stacey, tell everybody how they can get a hold of your book digitally.
Yeah, digitally, you can get a free download at howtoberesilient.com.au. And it's also the hard copy is available for purchase on Amazon, any good bookstore. You can go into your local bookstore and ask them to get it in for you. But yeah, howtoberesilient.com.au is the quickest way to get hold of it.
And I will put that in the show notes and the description as well to get your own personal book. Hey, everybody else, thank you for coming in. Do something today. Tomorrow, something next week that's going to help you persevere past your paralysis.
Thanks for listening to the Professor of Perseverance podcast for motivation, inspiration, and encouragement. For more information, go to Facebook at Professor of Perseverance. Visit the website at professorofperseverance.com and view the YouTube channel, Dr. James Perdue, Professor of Perseverance.